Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for July the 16th, 2018. This is David Corey along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Tonight on our show, our special guest is Catherine Thomas, who served in the United States Navy as a helicopter pilot, but who had to leave active duty early after an injury. And now in her current career, is the executive director of an organization called Yoga for Change, as well as the CEO of Anamar Environmental Consulting Incorporated. Her schedule is busy, so we pre-recorded her interview last Friday, and so we're glad to present that interview this evening. Then, in our second segment of the show, Richard Hurley and I will continue last week's discussion of two major projects we are planning and working on. So sit back, stay tuned for another fast hour here on BBS Radio. But first, before we turn to Catherine Thomas's interview, let's go over to Richard Hurley. Good evening, Richard.
Hey, David, and good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome you to the Veterans News Hour. I would like to remind our listeners that we are also a call-in show, so you can let us know what is on your mind as far as veterans' issues. Our toll-free call-in number covering the United States is 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. If you have a question or a topic regarding VA issues, your own issues pertaining to the VA, give us a call at 1-888-627-6008. And now back to you, David.
Thanks, Richard. In our first segment, we'll present our interview of Catherine Thomas. So I'll ask our producer, Doug Newsom, to now roll that tape, please. It's my privilege to introduce our special guest today on the Veterans News Hour. Catherine Thomas is the executive director of Yoga for Change, located in Florida, as well as the CEO of Anamar Environmental Consulting Incorporated. After serving in the United States Navy as a helicopter pilot, she began studying to become a yoga teacher through the Yoga School of Kailua. Upon moving to Jacksonville, Florida, she witnessed the need for mental, emotional, and physical healing in her new community and started Yoga for Change to fill that void. Catherine has training in multiple disciplines, including power yoga, chair yoga, hatha yoga, and yoga nidra, which I'm sure she will explain to us shortly. Catherine formerly served on the board of the Yoga Service Council, where she worked as the project manager and contributed to two of the best practice book series, Yoga with Veterans, and Yoga in the Criminal Justice System. In her new role as the CEO of Anamar, Catherine is focusing on the business development of the company while taking the administrative duties off the shoulders of her technical staff. Catherine resides in Florida with her husband, daughter, and their two Labrador retrievers. So let me welcome Catherine Thomas to our show today. How are you, Catherine?
I'm good. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak this morning. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's our privilege, and thank you for being on our show. Let me begin by asking you to tell us about your Navy service. What inspired you to become an aviator?
Thank you. I am a part of a history of naval officers. My father was a naval officer. My grandfather, my brother was in the Navy as well. And so I come from a very service-oriented family. And when my husband's also in the Navy, so it's a part of our being. The first time I was on my father's ship for a Tiger cruise, during the day, I was able to watch and witness a helicopter demonstration. And from the age of 11 on, I knew that I wanted to fly helicopters. And so after graduating from high school, I went to the University of Rochester on a ROTC scholarship and was able to really be impacted by the amazing leadership and learning through school, and then also was able to get into flight school upon graduation. So during flight school, again, I just really wanted to fly helicopters, and I was able to go to my first fleet squadron. And on deployment is where I actually fell and injured myself. And through just horrible luck, I basically was medically retired and then medically separated due to some mistakes during surgery and rehabilitation, and I lost all the feeling in my left leg. So I wasn't able to fly helicopters anymore, but I was still able to be supportive of my husband and his military career. And he actually is a reserve officer now. So it's been great to go through that transition as well.
Well, thank you for your service and for the history of service in your family. I served in the Air Force, although I wasn't an aviator, but I had the chance to fly as a passenger in UH-1 Huey helicopters a few times, and also once in a CH-53 Jolly Green Giant, at least that's what the Air Force
calls. Yeah.
And I found flying in Hueys to be extremely cool. I was sitting right on the open door, flying along at low altitudes, and I've had a few friends that were helicopter pilots in the Army. One was in Vietnam and one served in the 80s. Mm. How did you find life as a Navy helicopter pilot? Can you share some stories with us about what that was like?
I love flying. I loved everything about being in the Navy and being a pilot. My last flight, I obviously didn't know it was my last flight, but the ocean, because we were in the middle of the Mediterranean, the ocean was glass still. And it was purple, and the sun was setting, and it was like glass and purple and beautiful coloring and blue, and there was a school of dolphins. It was, picturesque. And we had a camera on board that we had approval to have, and so my air crew guy in the back was attempting to take pictures of the scenery because it was just absolutely gorgeous, and he was unable to capture it. And my air boss kept saying, there's some things in life that are just not, you can't describe with a picture, you just have to see it for yourself. And that was something that I will always take with me is, we can be doing something very important and super secretive and, something that's very, very militaristic, but if you just open up your eyes and kind of take a step back, you can see the beauty in, the world around you no matter what you're doing. So it's really powerful. And then we also really loved the men and the few women I actually got to serve with, the men that I got to serve with, were amazing. I'm proud to have been able to serve with the men and women I served with, and they taught me a lot about being a leader and then also how to be part of a team. So,
well, that's awesome, and thank you again for your service. And I just can only imagine how cool it must have been to be a helicopter pilot. Can you tell us what led you to getting it? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was saying it was awesome. It was awesome.
Can you tell us what led you to getting involved with yoga?
Well, I, like I said, I wanted to be a helicopter pilot from the age of 11, and I did everything with that goal in mind. When I fell, I went from being very active, surfing, running, biking, hiking, walk, very active to being sedentary because I was on a non-weight bearing cast from April until August, and then I had surgery. It was a very hard time in my life, and I was starting to put on a lot of excess physical weight. But also, along with my injury, came a lot of mental and emotional trauma. As in, when I was told I'd never fly again, well, then what am I supposed to do? Because I've been trying to do this since, I was 11. So through that process, my physical therapist recommended that I start taking yoga because I feel like he saw or he might have experienced the benefits of it, but he proposed it to me as, trying to engage muscles that you might not be currently engaging, which was true. And so on my yoga mat for that hour, I kind of forgot of everything I wasn't going to be able to accomplish. How I wasn't going to be flying again or how I would never be on deployment again. And instead I could focus on what I could still do, how I could still move my hands and my feet, how I could still, I could still achieve physically. And after that hour, I realized that I felt okay in the skin that I was in, actually. And I just kept practicing yoga. And then my husband at that time was stationed in Hawaii, and I was stationed in Mayport, Florida. So for the last 6 months of my active duty service, they allowed me to be stationed in the same area that he was. So that at that point, I started to do my teacher training through the Yoga School of Kailua. And part of this training allowed me to see, was giving back to the community. And so we brought yoga into an incarcerated facility on the island of Oahu. And I saw the same kind of light go off in our students' eyes. I was able to see they felt like they could still achieve and they could still move, even though they might not be in a facility or a place that they wanted to be in. And then when we moved to Florida, my husband was transferred to Florida, Jacksonville, Florida. I just brought that healing that I had really experienced to my own community. And that's when we founded Yoga for Change. So Yoga for Change brings a different type of yoga. It's not really what you take in a studio. It's very specific to the populations we serve. And we specifically teach veterans, incarcerated individuals, youth, and those suffering from substance abuse. And so what that means is we go to the facilities that teach our students or work with our students. So thinking like a VA outpatient hospital for veterans or a jail for incarcerated individuals or a school or a residential facility for youth or like a halfway house or rehab clinic for substance abuse. And so we bring that yoga to our students so that they don't have to feel like they have to leave or maybe they can't leave where they are, but they also feel comfortable in those facilities already potentially. So we take out all that extra variable of what clothes do I wear or what yoga mat or how do I show up, and instead we meet them where they are.
Right, and it removes an excuse they might have for not going, which is they have to go somewhere. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Could you tell us, for those in our audience who aren't familiar with yoga, and I know when I introduced you, I mentioned that you have training in power yoga, chair yoga, hatha yoga, and yoga nidra. Can you explain what the differences are and what that really means?
Of course. Well, I think the easiest way to understand it is just to kind of take four different, just our four populations we serve. So veterans who are struggling with PTSD, with traumatic brain injury or military sexual trauma, are a different type of human than a child who is potentially a younger kid, or even a child who's gone through extreme devastating abuse. And so what we do is we show up to the facility that's serving our students, and we kind of match the types of yoga with the physical ability of the student there. So, for instance, we're not going to teach a power yoga class, which is like the hot yoga, sweaty yoga, to individuals who've suffered a traumatic brain injury because, you know, you're not supposed to raise blood pressure or put your head below your heart. So our teachers are trained in specific types of yoga that ensure that the student is safe to participate. Also, if you have an amputee, you're not necessarily going to teach a power yoga class, because what that does to that individual who's already struggling potentially with body security, you don't want to disempower them so that when they leave the class, they'll never come back. Instead, you want to empower them to remind them that you can still achieve physically, which is why we tend to do chair yoga for individuals who might be having some physical limitations. And we do power yoga for incarcerated men specifically because they have a lot of anger and aggression potentially to get out of their bodies. And we do yoga nidra for individuals who are struggling with substance abuse, because what that does is that type of yoga specifically allows individuals to come to a place of rest and to start to it's very based in evidence, and it allows individuals to kind of really deal with their emotional traumas in a safer place, so that when they leave that actual state, they feel very rested. So that's just kind of a couple examples of the different types of yoga.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. What kinds of results, Catherine, have you seen in these different programs that you described, and what kind of feedback have you received from those people that have been involved?
Well, we actually collect data. Because when I started Yoga for Change in 2014, I was very naive. I came from, as you know, a military background. And I started a nonprofit with my husband and my father on the board, thinking a lot of people will love to donate to Yoga for Change because we're bringing yoga to veterans and incarcerated individuals and youth and those suffering from substance abuse. Why wouldn't they?
Right.
What I found is there are a lot of misconceptions in what actually we were bringing in. And also, it was hard to prove the impact to the student. And so what I started to do early on was to collect data. So we collected self-reported ratings of stress and mood on a scale, and then we started to collect blood pressure and heart rate. And what we found is, which is wonderful, because it's not like our Yoga for Change might have a specific curriculum, but it really ties into the same types of yoga that many other yoga service organizations are already doing. So it helps to validate the work that we are as a sector are doing. But what we found is across the board, all four populations found the average of a reduction in 25% in stress and an increase about 30% in mood. So what that means is an individual, a veteran, would walk into our class and rate himself as a 10 for stress. He would leave more than likely being at least a 7. And then when their mood score, they would rate themselves, they would increase by around 30%, so maybe a 1 to a 3, if you will. And so that's pretty awesome because it means that somebody actually feels better and less stressed. But what's really cool is by taking the blood pressure, we can prove that our program reduces blood pressure points between 10 and 20 points every class, an hour-long class. And so that's pretty powerful because these are individuals who might be having high blood pressure, specifically individuals who are incarcerated. They might have high blood pressure, and there are a lot of stress and anxiety there, and we don't want them to leave the facilities less healthy than they walked in. And so this program is being served as an intervention to help prove that we can keep them sort of hopefully a little bit healthy. So when they leave, our communities are not then having to pay for the cost of health care for these individuals if we can do something while they're incarcerated. And so that actually led to, we have a current year-long study of our incarcerated program to show the impact. And we're studying different things like self-compassion. We're able to study forgiveness. We're able to study, mental health and physical health days, blood pressure, and just really able to see the impact of our program so that when our donors want to know where their money is going, they can actually know that their money is going to support a program that's reducing stress, increasing mood, and reducing blood pressure in really underserved populations. So that's been really powerful for our organization.
Well, that's very impressive, and it's something that, I represent and know a lot of veterans, many with PTSD and some with TBI, and it what you've described seems to me something that the VA and other veterans groups really need to embrace, and they'll find that it's helpful. What advice, Catherine, would you have for veterans and their families about how yoga can be a positive activity in their life, especially for listeners who may not be familiar with yoga?
Right, and I know the misconception there is that you have to be really flexible and you have to put your head behind your head, your foot behind your head and, put yourself into a pretzel posture. And that's really just not true. That's really great if you can do that, but that's not really the type of yoga that might work best for your body because you might have some physical limitations due to an injury that you suffered while on deployment. And so I recommend that if an individual is hurting, and struggling with some PTSD, triggering, and there's a caregiver that just needs to feel okay in their skin and wants to connect maybe back with their body just to kind of feel like less stressed out, just to look up a yoga studio in your local area and maybe go to a beginning class. Because you might find that you actually don't need to go to a beginning class. You actually are better physically, and you have more physical ability than you believed. And so just by going and showing up to your first yoga class is wonderful. However, I do have to just say a caution just because I would hate for somebody to be triggered in a yoga class or to be put into an uncomfortable posture where their head is below their heart. You just need to be really aware and you just need to be comfortable enough to say to that yoga teacher what has occurred to you. So if you have a traumatic brain injury, you need to let the teacher know that I have a TBI, and just ensure that they are aware of that, you know, what that means for their class.
Right.
What modifications they should recommend. Just because, again, I have gone to a class. I have PTSD due to some military sexual trauma that occurred while I served. And so I have the awareness, and I am comfortable in a yoga class just because I have gone through yoga teacher training. But I've seen some other people who show up, and I, you know, are uncomfortable or are given a posture that they really are just struggling to do, and they don't know the modification. So I just put that out there. Just, you know, if the first yoga class you go to doesn't really resonate with your body, don't assume that that's the only type of yoga out there, because there's as many types of yoga out there as there are different fast food restaurants. So I'm sure you can find a different kind.
Right. Well, that's great advice. I appreciate that. Catherine, before we go, can you tell our listeners what your website is, how they can donate to help Yoga for Change, and perhaps what they should do to find out more about yoga?
Yes. Well, if you were to go to y4c.org, that's our website for our organization, and that will give you a lot of information there, how you can donate. It's y4c.org/donate. And then also, we do have on our news page, so that will be y4c.org/news, you do have examples of short practices, as well as some blog posts, information about other organizations. And, of course, all your listeners can contact us through our contact page as well with other questions.
Well, that's super, Catherine. And I'd like to thank you very much for being on the Veterans News Hour today. I'd also like to thank you for all the great work that you and members of Yoga for Change are doing to help veterans and other people. And we certainly wish you continued success in the future.
I appreciate it immensely. Thank you so much. And I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Well, we'd like to... again, thank Catherine Thomas for being on our show. It was taped last Friday. Just like to remind our listeners that the organization's website is y4c.org. That's Y, the numeral 4, the letter C, dot org. That stands for Yoga for Change. Find out more about the organization, which is actually quite extensive. As she said, they serve a number of different groups, including veterans, but also those that are incarcerated, students, those suffering from substance abuse, and more. So excellent resource if you want to learn more about yoga or care to donate. Richard, I know you're a fan of yoga. Can you share with us some of your experience, insight, and recommendations?
Absolutely. By the way, that was a great interview. Before I get into... some of my thoughts about yoga, I just want to something you and I had talked about, David, that there's so many possibilities out there for helping our veterans, and we've been exploring them on our prior shows. And tonight's interview with Catherine on yoga is just another example of everything, all the different things that people can do to help veterans and share their own experiences, their own professional attributes. Yoga is a terrific source for when you're dealing with athletes dealing with yoga, people in recovery dealing with yoga. My brother has been doing yoga for like 30, 35 years, and he he's very, very good. He teaches it himself. He had hurt his back so bad that at one point he had to crawl to the John. And, you know, I'm sure, David, you've had friends and family members who've had back injuries, and I have my own little issues. I've never had surgery, but I have a lot of friends who've had surgery on their back issues, and I think most people will agree that you don't really get better from a back injury, and especially surgeries don't really help. Well, my brother, the average person would have said, you need to have surgery. Well, he didn't have surgery, and he cured himself through yoga. And doing all all the postures and everything else. And today he can stand on his head for an hour and a half. It cracks me up.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. He can't do any other athletic event, and he used to be a very good athlete. He used to play a lot of tennis together. We played a lot of tennis, played a lot of basketball together. He can't play any sport anymore, but that boy can do yoga like you wouldn't believe, and I can't even come close to the stuff he can do.
Wow.
You know, one of the things about yoga that I've learned is it's about the breathing. When you're going into these different postures, and the basic yoga hour, you go through 26 different postures. And as Kathleen said, a lot of the postures affect different parts of the body. And if you do have an injury, let's say to your neck, then when you get into the neck postures, you take it easy. If you have an injury to your back, when you start getting into the back injuries, you take it easy. Or anything with the lower extremities. As you're getting into those postures, you just take it easy. Because while the postures are one part of the yoga, it's the breathing that you do while you're going through the postures that's important. And that's what really works. You know, people who have anxiety and stress, and, you know, Kathleen doing this for veterans who are suffering from PTSD, it's a perfect opportunity. And in a lot of cases, could be a remedy for a lot of veterans by doing the yoga. Then she was talking about the chair yoga, where I live, it's a lot of senior citizens, and everybody's doing chair yoga because they're older and they can't, you know, get down, you know, down on the ground, and they can't bend and everything else. So you can do 26, or not 26 postures, but you can do a lot of the postures just sitting in a chair. And you do what you can. But again, it's about that breathing and the deep breathing. And as you're going through it, you know, you breathe in through your mouth and then you exhale through your nose. And depending on who you get as your leader in the different yoga exercises, they can really do some intense breathing with the, I'm not going to do it over, you know, on the air right now, but sometimes it's actually pretty funny to hear them. It sounds like almost a seal letting out the air. Again, it's all about the breathing and the mental aspect of yoga. So, I highly recommend it. If you can't find Kathleen's class, if you're not up in the Jacksonville area, there's yoga everywhere. It's so popular. I know down around the St. Pete area, it seems every other building is either a coffee shop or a yoga studio. So, any veterans who are listening out there, definitely look into it. I think you'd find it extremely helpful for whatever remedy that you're looking for, especially if it's the PTSD. On my own personal note, and I've shared this before, when I dealt with my own issues with alcoholism 11 years ago, three out of the 5 days, we had to do yoga. And, it was part of the recovery process. So they go hand in hand, David.
Well, thanks for sharing your experience. And with just a kind of a basic question for those that may not be familiar, how long did you say a typical class is if someone goes, you know, like three times a week? Is it like for an hour a day or what? What is it?
Usually it's about an hour and a half.
Hour and a half, okay.
Yeah, hour and a half. And then another yoga, she mentioned hot yoga. Hot yoga is usually done in a room where the temperature is about 105 degrees. And by the time you finish doing hot yoga after an hour and a half, you would have thought that you just jumped into a pool of water. You are drenched. I've always enjoyed it.
I think she also mentioned Hatha, H-A-T-H-A, Hatha yoga, and also power yoga, which she said, is kind of helpful for people that have a lot of anger they got to work out.
I found that interesting. I'm not familiar with the power yoga, but I found that very interesting that there's actually a specific yoga to deal with that particular mental issue. interesting.
Well, I guess I take it to be, you know, maybe more of a strenuous workout. You can find a lot more on the website, which is y4c.org. That's Y, the numeral 4C, stands for yogaforchange.org. You can find a lot more information about the different kinds of yoga and the classes they have. You can donate to the organization, which I think is a really worthy organization to contribute to if you can. And perhaps other veteran groups or veterans that are listening might be inspired by this to look into that as another option, because, as I say, it is just another resource, another avenue for helping people that might be struggling with post-traumatic stress or other issues, including physical. So, Richard, before we go to our second segment, any further thoughts on that?
No, I think you know, I remember when we were talking about Catherine coming on the show, I haven't really thought about yoga for veterans, yoga for PTSD, and clearly it makes a lot of sense. Again, sharing my own experiences with it. So I would highly recommend to any veteran listening tonight that if you have some sort of issue, especially if it's a mental issue, by all means, reach out to someone who in your community who's teaching yoga. And you know, a lot of times you don't even need to, but a lot of yoga classes are free. I know in my area, my girlfriend goes to yoga, and she brings canned goods to her yoga class, and that's the price of admission. So, you know, it's not something that's, you know, cost burdensome. So, you know,
well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
That's good to know, and I'm sure we can also work that in to our discussion about a Florida Camp Hope in a few minutes. But for our listeners, in our second segment, which we'll turn to now, second segment of the show tonight, we want to continue last week's discussion about the two major projects which we have in the works, and we'll get to that in just a moment. First, I'd like to remind our listeners, of course, this is a call-in show. You can let us know what's on your mind or if you have questions. Our toll-free call-in number covering the entire United States is 1-888-627-6008. Again, if you're just grabbing your pen and paper, toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Okay, Richard, why don't you start with your ideas and insights about a project which I know you're very interested in and have already started working on, which is a Florida version of Houston's Camp Hope.
Thank you, David. Yeah, the concept behind the Houston Camp Hope and the concept that I'm going to do here in Florida is a camp that's spiritually based, and with the 12-step model. 12-step, of course, is used in both AA and NA recovery groups. Focusing on veterans suffering from PTSD, and you know, oftentimes the alcohol or the drugs are a symptom of what's going on with the veteran. In this case, it could be is the PTSD. And David, you and I both know we see many times veterans suffering from alcohol and drug abuse, who are suffering from PTSD, and you know they get hooked on both or one or the other or both to medicate themselves. So the camp is going to focus on, you know, getting the veteran clean and free from the alcohol and the drugs. And then once you do that, then you can address the underlying issue, which in this case would be the post-traumatic stress. So much like at Camp Hope in Houston, the first probably 25 to 35 days will be done in a blackout, what we call blackout period. And during that time period, the veteran will have no contact with anybody but the mentor that who would be assigned to him or her at the camp. And much like, David, when you were in basic training and you had to go through boot camp to get prepare yourself for the military and combat, this blackout period would be to essentially reverse that process. And free the veteran from what the veteran went through, training for the military. Then once you do that, you then, now you have a person who, is mentally able to start working on him or herself. And that's where the STEP program comes in. And you go to group therapy, you have peer-to-peer counseling, you'll have yoga. You'll probably have 3 to 4 days of yoga. You'll have exercise, 3 to 4 days a week of exercise. You'll have a period of study, because when you go through the group programs, there's homework involved. So when you're in the camp, you're kept quite busy. There's very little downtime, especially early on, and that's really key, because you have to stay busy, especially for someone who has been struggling with alcohol or drugs, and you know that period of detoxing. Is, you know, usually detox takes 4 to 7 days, but mentally detox can take well into 3 to 9 months. So all that's going on, and that's another thing, talking about the time period. Most alcohol or drug programs are what we call 28-day programs. The 28-day program, just so, I don't know if anyone's familiar with the 28-day program, but originally back in the 80s when you had alcohol and drug programs, they could go on for months. And they were all, most of them were paid through insurance. Well, eventually the medical profession and the insurance companies got together and they said, you know, we can't keep paying this kind of money. And the medical profession came up with a number of 28 days. And that's how they came about, compared to the 28-day program. But most people will tell you 28 days for an alcohol or drug person who's addicted doesn't quite make it. I think there's a less than 8% chance of recovery for someone who starts a 28-day program and who doesn't end up relapsing. So it's very, very slim. So at Camp Hope, the program is going to run anywhere from 3 months to 9 months. At that point, the veteran will probably be in a position to be able to step out and get back into civilian life. The program is also going to work closely with the veterans courts. You know, in Florida, we have a lot of counties now that have veterans courts. So in lieu of a potential incarceration, the judge, hopefully you'll have a judge who would be mindful of these types of programs and how helpful it is to veterans, will want to be able to send the veteran to the camp in lieu of incarceration. Because, you know, nobody gets better in jail, but you can get better in recovery. But, you know, unfortunately, we have different judges in different counties, and they don't necessarily think the same way. I'm dealing with a case right now in Pinellas County, Florida. And the judges there are pretty vicious, and it's unfortunate that they're not giving the veterans a second chance. So that's another aspect of it. And one of the other things, and I've been talking to a couple of, depending on where I can locate the camp, the idea would be about 10 to 20 acres. And the more acreage, obviously the more I can do with it. And one of the things would be to have horses on at the camp. And the horses would be, you know, a way for veterans to work the stables, clean the stables, take care of the horses. That contact, I know I've done reading on it. I'm sure David, you've done reading on how important pets and animals can be to people suffering with emotional and mental issues. So that
right.
would be one another aspect of it. And then was recommended to me to, if we had enough land, to actually have an area where people could camp at the camp, so that, you know, you get a group of veterans, half a dozen veterans, and one night they want to go camping. So on the land, you can go out, and there'll be woods out there, and they can pitch a tent and get a fire going and sit around and talk. Again, that's part of that peer-to-peer counseling that you, David, you and I have been, we've had a lot of guests on the show talking about that peer-to-peer counseling. So, you know, it's going to be a 24-hour for 3 to 9 month period of time where a veteran's really going to be, like, immersed in recovery and working on his or herself. And, you know, that I just can't say enough of that opportunity for any veteran. And if you can't wait around for my camp to start in Florida, you want to reach out to our show, give us a call. I can get you information on Camp Hope in Houston. Or if there's a family member listening to the show tonight and you think that some of the things I'm talking about might be helpful to a family member, give us a call. You can also reach me at 727-612-1515, and I can put you in touch with the people at Camp Hope in Houston. I, you know, can't say enough about the success that they're having at that camp. And, you know, if we can duplicate that here in Florida or even step it up a notch and make it a little bit better, then, you know, that's going to be terrific. So what do you think, David?
I applaud all your ideas, and I like how you're thinking really of even expanding it further. Camp Hope in Houston is pretty impressive as it is, but then I like your idea about adding it so that there's also a camping area so veterans that might be there just for a short time for a visit or just need a place as a getaway, a short, you know, just to get away from the hassle of daily living, to, you know, and you're in a very, for those not familiar with where you are, you're in the kind of the north central part of Florida, and you mentioned you know, horses at one point. Yeah, you're near Ocala, which is well known as kind of horse country in the state of Florida. So it's a prime area, but even if it's not located exactly in that area, but in some other part of Florida, I think
we have a couple of clients, David, that are dealing, you know, work with horses. They own horses. They also feed horses. Matter of fact, one of our clients, he's the one who provides the feed for the Triple Crown winner this year. I can't recall the name of the horse off the top of my head, but yeah, he's provided all that feed for that particular farm. So, you know, that's definitely going to be doable, assuming we, you know, can find the space. And finally, on the Camp Hope, we would also have some, you know, little structures set up, much like a little apartment, so that before the veteran graduates into civilian life, he could go into these little pods. You know, for the first 3, 6, 9 months, he's going to be in a dorm type of situation with other veterans. And then the dorm, they'll have, you know, their own kitchens, and everybody has to cook, and everybody has to clean up, and, you know, you're assigned duties and everything. So once you graduate out of there, you can then move into this little apartment setup, and it might be a situation where you could even have your spouse come, your kids could come and live with you, again, to get you acclimated to eventually moving outside of Camp Hope and into civilian life, where you have to start fending for yourself again, taking care of your family again, you know, giving you some self-worth back, self-respect back. And you know, and David, you've said this to me many times, you know, soldiers are trained to be soldiers. Soldiers are trained to take care of people and do all those things that we expect from soldiers. But then when, you know, you get stuck with emotional issues and PTSD, and, you know, a lot of that's taken away from you. And a lot of the veterans that we deal with just have a tough time just getting out of bed. And so hopefully through the process of Camp Hope, all that can be restored, and the veteran can, you know, get that self-worth, self-respect back.
Yeah, and if I could just add, for our listeners who want to know more about this Camp Hope that we've spoken about so much, good thing about our show is BBS Radio archives our prior shows. Go back and listen to our September the 11th, 2017 show. One of our two guests that evening was David Malsby of the PTSD Foundation of America and also the director of Camp Hope in Houston. And he talks about Camp Hope and how it got started and what it involves. And then listen to our March 12, 2018 show. It's March 12th show. We had our guest was Jason White, who was a Marine Corps veteran who actually had just finished was in the process of finishing very close to the day of the interview, the PTSD treatment program there at Camp Hope. So he had the perspective of a veteran that was graduating from the program. And we've also had other guests like Brian Meyer of the Veterans Community Project, Kansas City, who talked about their tiny home project for homeless. We've had other veterans like Sean Knowles of Volunteers of America, who talked about their program for helping veterans, homeless veterans, but other veterans as well. So I think there's a lot of resources out there. And I think one of the goals of this show that we have, the Veterans News Hour, is to tap into those the expertise of groups around the country and learn from their experiences and share those experiences and duplicate them and improve upon them. And I think, Richard, your idea is about starting Camp Hope in Florida. It's a great one. And I know there's a lot to be done, but one step at a time. And let me just take a couple minutes and talk about the second project we have underway, and then it'll be time to wrap up. It's been another quick hour. The second project we have, the genesis of it, actually goes back to several guests we had last year in 2017. We had two of the directors of the Cost of War Project from Brown University on our show last September 25th, Professors Catherine Lutz and Professor Anita Crawford. And very enlightening. They've done a lot of research on the cost of the post-9/11 wars. We've had also several filmmakers over the last year. And it prompted me to ask the question of Professor Lutz and Professor Crawford, you know, have you had a documentary made of all your work? And they've had some very short clips, short films done, but nothing like what you would see on PBS, and nothing that approaching what, you know, Rick Burns or Ken Burns have done with Vietnam War, Civil War, and some other wars. So that was kind of the genesis of the idea of, well, these things need to be put into film, because most Americans don't read very much. That's just a reality. And but though they may watch a well-done film, documentary film. A way to preserve history, but also educational, which is very important. So check out our website, which is easy to remember. It's www.stopwar.today. So check it out, stopwar.today. Share it on social media if you're interested. If you like the website, share it on Facebook or Twitter or any of these other social media websites. The basic purpose is a very simple one. We want to promote peace. We've had a lot of war the last generation, and if you can contribute your time, your talent, your treasure to this effort. We have a number of projects underway, mostly educational in nature. We want to work with filmmakers that are skilled in what they're doing to make some films on the human, social, and financial costs of the post-9/11 wars, but also educational in terms of peaceful conflict resolution. There's a lot to learn. It's a very complex area. I'm not in any way implying that it's simple, but if the effort's not made, we know what the outcome will be. So anyway, check out the website, stopwar.today, and share it on social media. So we're about running out of time, so Richard, over to you.
Yeah, David, that's going to be a great project, that Stop War. You know, you were talking about a whole generation. When you think about how long we've been in Afghanistan, it's the longest war in the history of this country. And, you know, you got a whole generation. I just, with my girlfriend's son's birthday, he just turned 20 today. As you were talking, I was thinking, you know, out of his 20 years, he's basically, his entire life has been spent with our country in war. And that's just awful.
Right.
You know, and so we got to start somewhere, and got to get that awareness out there to people. And hopefully this documentary will be just another thing for people to stop and think. War is not the answer. So before we close tonight, we have our weekly reminder to our families about the Coaching in the Care program. Coaching in the Care helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching in the Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call, toll-free 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, the VA's Coaching in the Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I would like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has a Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Thanks, Richard. Well, it's time for us to go for this evening. We'd like to thank all of you for listening in to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. We'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. And we hope that you all tune in next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you have a great rest of the week.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.